Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Women Over 50 Alive Redesigned. This is Shelley, I'm your host, and I'm so glad you are joining me today for my episode with Joy Overstreet. Man, I tell you what a terrific interview this was. Joy is 81 years old. Yes, 81 years old, the author of The Cherry Pie Paradox, The Surprising Path to Diet Freedom and Lasting Weight Loss. But we didn't talk about that. We talked about her experiences throughout the year. She's, you know, like many of my guests, has had some tragic moments. In 1974, her husband died of cancer. She was only 34 with two little children to raise. And then she ended up leaving her second husband a few days after 9/11, who turned out to be bipolar, and took a 9-week sabbatical trip across the United States in her minivan with her poodle, Molly. So it was just a super fun interview, and we talked about staying curious, you know, being curious. What would happen in your life if you were open to exploring new things, trying new things? And that's what Joy did. And she's just a delightful woman. I love talking to her. And I think you're going to like this episode with Joy as much as I did. But before we continue, we have a Facebook group. Look down below in the show notes and you'll find the link. Click on there. There are 65 other amazing women in that group, just like you. So on to our episode with Joy.
I think, you know, I took philosophy in college, and I remember Heraclitus, who said that the only constant in life is change. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, fine, sure. And I had a vision. I had a vision for what my life would be like. And it was, well, you know, I was born in 1940, and my vision was pretty much what I saw as my mom, who was, you know, a 1950s mother. Mm-hmm. Not exactly June Cleaver, but, you know, the whole home and hearth thing. And that's what I was going to do. And so I had my perfect life plan. And I figured, okay, the trajectory will be, you know, it may not be exactly straight, but it's going to, and it may have a few wibbles and wobbles, but it's basically, I can foresee the direction. And it looks kind of like my mom's. She was happily married for until my dad died when he was 80. And so I expected to live like that. I expected to be a really great homemaker and marry my soulmate and all that. And it didn't work out that way. And I married a guy that I loved, but more honestly, a little bit out of desperation, because I was 25, I was 26. And it's like, I was old maid, because at that time, yeah, you know, that's what everybody did, was we got married. And so I got married and dug into becoming the best homemaker I could be, and raised two little kids. Well, started raising two little kids. And then when they were 4 and 1, my husband was diagnosed with testicular cancer, which is not, at the time, was really a very dangerous, mm-hmm, prognosis. Yeah. I have to say I didn't handle it well. I mean, it's hard to handle that well, but I was kind of outraged. You know, this is like, you totally screwed up with my perfect life plan. You know, people in my family don't get sick and they don't die, and they certainly don't die when they're young. And so there was that. And after he died, I just got so depressed, and mm-hmm, I was depressed, and it was worse. I mean, it was not just being anxious about the future. It was also, and grief, but I was also, I felt so ashamed of how I'd behaved during the marriage, that I wasn't supportive enough, and that I could have done this and should have done that and all that stuff. And anyway, so my solution was to eat and to diet and to eat and to diet. And I had already done that for years, but it became like an obsession. And so I was just mortified that I was as shallow as that, that I was concerned more about my weight and what I was going to eat or didn't eat than my children or anything. And I ended up having a coaching session with a friend of mine from EST. I think I need to mention what EST is or was at the time. When Edward was diagnosed, one of the things that many people in Berkeley were doing at the time was this thing, this personal transformation training called EST. And we did it because we realized we were not coping well. And EST stands for it is. In other words, and what we were supposed to get out of the 2 weekends was it is what it is and like deal.
I've actually heard of EST. I saw it on a TV show that a couple had gone to EST.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it was amazing for me. It just totally changed my life. And it changed Edward. I mean, it changed our life. But that said, you don't act like an enlightened being overnight. And so EST has become Landmark, which is a lot kinder and gentler and still gives you the same bang for the buck. But anyway, my friend Cherie was also an EST graduate. And she said, you know, I was complaining that I just wanted to figure out what I was going to do with my life because I had to do something. I had to start earning money. I had to find my way. But I just couldn't do anything until I could deal with my weight. And she said, well, what if the obstacle is the way, you know, that the only way to deal with something is to go through it, to face it. And I was like, but anyway, I gave up dieting and decided to start telling the truth about what I was eating and to start examining how I was thinking, because it was my thought process that was really toxic. And so anyway, out of this whole process, I had an experience shortly after this first encounter or session with Cherie was that I had a breakfast with a friend named Carol, and she was a skinny little thing, and she was eating cherry pie for breakfast. Now, I'm sure I had seen people eating, you know, people who are skinny eating things that are fattening over time, but I was in that place where it suddenly hit me. This skinny person is eating pie, and not only is she eating pie, but she halfway through the piece, she tossed the part that she didn't want. She said, I'm full, I'm done. Yeah. And I'm like, you can't just throw away a piece of pie.
Perfectly good piece of cherry pie.
Perfect, you know, and if she had left the room, I'd have been in that wastebasket after it. I mean, it was, yeah. So I thought to myself, you know, there's something that I'm thinking in a way that she is not thinking. And what is that? And I realized that she thought like a true thin person. And I thought like a fat, thin person, that even when I was at my ideal weight, I was waiting for my fat self to jump out and grab all the donuts. You know, it was, anyway, so I started to look for my thin self. I mean, I knew the yin yang symbol of how things are not actually opposites, but they mold into each other and flow. And I knew that you couldn't be thin without being fat or fat without being thin, hot, cold, all of that. And so I started looking for my thin self. And one night I had this idea in the middle of the night, thin within, and that was what I wanted to be. And I realized that was what I wanted to do. If I could solve this problem for myself, I wanted to share it with other people because it had been such a burden for me, such an energy suck, such a useless waste of energy. Anyway, so I created this seminar program that was in a sense based on the discovery process that I'd experienced in Est, which is to tell the truth about what you're, where you are and what you're doing and how you're talking to yourself, the lies and stories and excuses you're making for yourself, and envision yourself. There was a bit of the law of attraction there, although it was not called that. There was the idea that as you believe, you act, and as you act, you get the results. I mean, you see that every day. And I knew that because I had always believed I was a good cook. So I did all the things that good cooks do. I got cookbooks and tried challenging recipes and made all kinds of stuff. And even when it failed, you know, if the souffle fell, I called it a frittata and just like moved on. Now, if I had thought of myself as I can't cook, I wouldn't have even tried the souffle. And if I had and it fell, I would have said, that's it. You know, I can't do this at any rate. But the part of the be, do, and have, the doing involves a lot of practice. I mean, it's not just doing once. It's doing and doing and doing and doing. And when you get the results, it becomes a positive cycle. And so Thin Within was about practicing and experiencing the thin part of ourselves, or the healthy eater. I mean, I don't like the words fat and thin anymore at all. But anyway, does that make sense?
It does. And you know, it can be applicable to anything. It doesn't have to be applicable to the science.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And people ask me why I'm writing this book after 40 years, because this was 1975 that I came up with this idea. And honestly, I don't really, weight doesn't particularly interest me anymore, but the process of transforming and changing something so entrenched is something that will always intrigue me. And it sort of underlies all the work that I have been doing ever since.
I find that interesting because, and it's just a little personal side note, but I'm 5'10", so I'm tall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like 50 pounds. I weigh 50 pounds more than I did 10 years ago. What I thought was my healthy weight, but I've been thin my entire life. Like I ate Doritos and drank Coke for breakfast every day till I was about 45. And then all of a sudden something happened. I'm probably menopause and boom. So I need to get, I love what you said, although it's making me, I'm going to be honest with you, Joy, here. And I think a lot of people are going to feel the same way. Is that tell the truth about what you're doing to yourself is, hard. Thank you. I'm just going to get another bowl of nacho cheese Doritos and salsa because I don't want to go there. That's very uncomfortable.
Right. For people. It's very uncomfortable. And
but necessary. I mean, it's something I'm not saying don't do it because it makes you uncomfortable.
The thing is, it's already uncomfortable. I mean, you're already suffering.
Gosh, Joy, that's a great point. Excellent point.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. So anyway, so the process of telling the truth, you have to really put your compassion hat on because it is uncomfortable. And you see things that are like, I don't like that about me. And I saw a lot of things I didn't like. And, it gets to a place where you can actually laugh about it. It's like, boy, I believe that stuff about myself, or I just did that. I just ate that whole thing. How did I do that? And then you hear the story you told yourself about why you did it, and you think, wow, that was very creative.
We can justify anything.
Yeah. But I want to get back to your point about being thin all your life. Until recently, or relatively recently, this program is about awareness. And I think what happens is over time, we stop being as aware of what we're doing as we yes. might be. And somebody like you can use some of these exercises to get back in touch with the sensations from your body, back in touch with the tastes of the foods that you're eating, so that, I mean, you become a much pickier eater. You realize that, well, even something as delicious as a fresh made brownie, for instance, from scratch, the first bite, or the anticipation is like on a level 10.
Yeah.
The first bite might even be a 10 as well. And then after a while, after several bites, the rating goes down to, well, maybe 6 or something like that, because your taste buds get saturated, satiated. Conversely, something that you anticipate is going to be a fantastic thing, because it's all you've always thought of it as fantastic. We used to do a thing with Hershey's Kisses, a tasting test. And people are like, yay, Hershey's Kisses. I love Hershey's Kisses. And then they actually taste it. Their expectation is at a 10. The first bite, or just the first smell, is like at a 3. And then they start eating it, and it gets up a little bit, but then there's the aftertaste, which is like a -2.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So it's that kind of thing where you start to get back in touch with your senses, and you'll find that, you know, and the way that you have used to think as a thin person, it's there, I promise you. So this process is good, not just for people who've been yo-yoing all their lives, but also for people who once were thin and then looked down one day and was like, what the hell happened here?
Yeah. And you know, that's so interesting, because I think a lot of us are pretty self-aware in a lot of areas of our lives. And then there are certain areas that just sort of go amok for some reason.
Right.
So, you know, it's the totality of everything that's going on. And I sort of, going back to something you said earlier, is that I have a great life. My life, the past 10 years has been the best 10 years of my life. And I've become very comfortable. I've become very settled in, you know, life is great. I'm having a great time. And then I think, yeah, I need to, you know, I'm feeling so great. My life's so great. I'm just going to have a whole cherry pie, whatever, you know? So I think, you know, we get uncomfortable and then we forget to keep asking ourselves those questions and looking at what we're doing. And then, you know, 10 years go by and 50 pounds are on and you're like you said, what the hell just happened?
What the hell? Yeah.
So that's really interesting. I also want to switch gears here real quickly, if I could. I want to hear about your 9-week sabbatical and what brought that on, and all the good things that happened during that.
Well, I think of myself as being not very courageous, kind of a scaredy cat. I'm very conservative physically. I don't take risks. So after my first husband died, I was single for 8 years. And then I met a guy who really felt like my soulmate. And in many ways, he was just wonderful. And he also turned out to be bipolar, and he self-medicated with alcohol. And it was just like, but we had a kid. And so finally when our youngest, or my youngest, left for college, I decided I couldn't take it anymore. And a friend had suggested a sabbatical. She had just finished reading Travels with Charlie. You know this book by John Steinbeck? Oh my gosh.
Okay.
I love this book so much, Travels with Charlie. He took a trip in his old pickup truck around the country in the early 60s and wrote about it. And I had a poodle, a standard poodle like Steinbeck did. That's Charlie is the poodle. And this friend said, you know, why don't you just take a break? And get out of Dodge. So I dropped my son off at college, was present for the birth of my first grandchild, and then packed up my Toyota minivan with my dog and my laptop and took off. My plan was to take off, I think it was going to be like September 13th. This was in 2001. Mm-hmm. And on 2 days before I was to leave, you know what happened.
Yeah, 9/11.
I almost scratched the trip. But, you know, I had been a mother, I had been staying at home. I'd been working for, that's a whole other thing. But anyway, I'd been a mother. I've been taking care of other people for 33 years straight. I didn't know, I'd never been alone. Didn't know if I could do it. I was terrified, but I was also desperate to sort of shake things loose. And so I took off, and like 3 days after the 9/11, and I was afraid that if I was alone with just my thoughts, that I would, that all those ugly things, that whatever was under the surface that I'd suppressed by being busy all those years, it would start to bubble up and I would be a psychotic mess by the time I hit Montana.
Yeah.
And it turned out that I loved listening to my own thoughts. I had never had a chance. And I realized that I couldn't have done this if I'd stayed at home. Mm-hmm. Because when you're surrounded by your own stuff, it keeps you anchored in both the past and the future. Where when you're driving into strange places that you've never been, you're just totally in the present. And it was so freeing. At any rate, I'd set some intentions for myself before I left. One was to be present. Another was to be open to whatever happened, you know, to what is. And the third was to play. And that was the hardest because I'm a doer and I don't stop to play very often. I mean, I have to be really pushed. And the Puritan in me just doesn't. At any rate, I found myself at one point, my son called, I had my cell phone with me, sort of an early cell phone. And my son called to ask me where I was. And I had just passed through this really adorable town in Ohio called Galena, or Illinois, can't remember. Anyway, and he's like, where are you, Mom? And I'm like, well, I'm about 10 miles past or 15 miles past Galena, Ohio, this cool town. It's like, and I described all the cool things about it. And he says, well, why didn't you stop? And I'm like, well, I wanted to get a little farther down the road. And he's like, Mom, I thought you said
that you wanted to be there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, why? And he said, go back to Galena. And I'm like, but I'm already, you know, it's going to take a half an hour. I mean, he's like, Mom. And so I created this word, acceleratoritis, which is when you get on the road and you just have to keep going. And I just had to fight that. But anyway, I ended up, I'd say half the time I was driving places and half the time I stayed in some place or other. My cousin had a house in Vermont that was way in the backwoods. And it was a very old house, like 200 years old. And it was 5 miles from anywhere. And it was scary at first, but I had the dog and, you know, it was such a comfort.
Yeah.
The other thing that happened with this, my poor dog, I'm driving across Montana and I started, I probably can't even say this without crying again. I was just overwhelmed by the beauty of the country. I was just like,
yeah.
Oh my God. And I started singing America the Beautiful. And I could not sing it. I started squeaking, you know, because I was trying to sing and cry at the same time.
Yeah.
And poor Molly. Molly's like, are you okay?
You okay, Mom?
Yeah. Anyway, but this trip, I realized that I could survive on my own, and I could keep myself amused, and that my own thoughts were interesting and worth exploring. I began writing a journal that I would send out, something I'd write every day to my friends and family, because they were kind of like, is she gonna be all right?
Yeah.
And I would ruminate every day on something I'd seen, and try to associate it with something larger than just the fact that I saw this thing. And one of the things I realized as I was describing a walk that I would take in Vermont was I always chose to go uphill first, because I could choose. The house was on a hill. I could go uphill or downhill. And yeah. I always chose uphill. And I was like, why is that? And I realized that I like to get over the hard things first.
Yeah.
And then coast. And I realized that's kind of how I live my life, that I do the hard things first. However, I don't usually give myself the opportunity to coast on the way down. I get on the next hill.
So I want to just talk about some of the things that you talked about. So on the sabbatical, on your trip where you were a little cautious because you were afraid of your own thoughts and all that. And I think that anyone who's listening that has the ability to, or figure out the ability to take off, whatever that looks like for you. It doesn't have to be 9 weeks in a minivan or 8 months like I did in Colorado, but someplace where you can go and be quiet with your own thoughts. Because what happens is, and you said it perfectly, you know, you spent all these years being this mother and this wife and, you know, caring for your husbands and all these things. And then, you know, you wake up one day and you're like, well, who am I? You cannot figure out who you are when you're surrounded by who you are. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so you're surrounded by all this mom, wife, you know, daughter, employee, whatever. And that's what you are. But when you get on the road and listen to your own thoughts, it's priceless, and it's such a gift if you can do it or figure out a way to get it done.
And you know, and I think it's really sad that, as far as, well, at that moment, really only professors and ministers were getting sabbaticals. And I think everyone needs a sabbatical. And 7 years is way too long between sabbaticals also. We don't take even vacations as much as people do in other countries. I mean, like, my son lives in France, and he gets all of August off and all kinds of other bank holidays and so forth. We just don't do that. We don't take, even if we get the time, we don't take it.
It's been almost 10 years since I did, well, I call it a sabbatical. I actually just ran away from home because my life was a shit show. But, you know. But so I had to get away and figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life and get away from the horrible relationship I'd been in. But, you know, listening to you, I thought, I'm going to figure out how to at least, you know, do a month on it. Because my partner, Steve, does that all the time. He's been retired for many years. And he was like, I'm going to go to Oregon. I'm like, okay. He'll drive out there and he'll drive back, you know. So I think it's really great for people that can do that. Wow, what a great story. And then some of the things that you've learned is that, yes, when you're on the road by yourself, you're trying to figure out all these things, especially if you haven't done it, you are very resilient. You are very creative in the way that you travel. But what I really like what you said here was, we have the answers inside of us if we're curious and unafraid to explore our dark corners. with the spirit of a compassionate scientist. That's just such mm-hmm. a perfect statement, because I often think of when I was growing up, you know, this whole inner child thing, and I grew up in a very, my dad was a violent alcoholic, and I mean, I talk about it all the time, so this is like true confessions or anything. Everyone who's listened to my podcast for 3 years have heard this story, but I think back to that little girl and how I've grown up and some of the things I've done that, you know, we don't like to admit, like, you know, some of the things that happened to us. But when you look at your life and some of the things that you're doing and thinking and how you want to take care of that, you really have to be compassionate, because I believe we all do the best we can with what we have when we are where we are.
You know? For sure. For sure. Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, people carry these wounds from childhood when they were, this bad thing happened when they were 6 years old or whatever. Yeah. And that story is just still, it is just running the show. Yeah. And most people never go back and take a look at actually what happened. You know, what were the facts of that? You know, what did he actually say? What did they actually do? And what happens is we have the event, and then we have the story, which builds up and builds up. And we are only 6 years old. Mm-hmm. We have, so that event looms huge, because in 6 years of experience, you have no context.
Exactly.
You only have the context in which you were raised, which is really limited. And so revisiting those things and discovering, oh, I was six. That I made that decision then. That, like, I can make a different decision today. Mm-hmm. I can have different feelings about it today.
Yeah.
I don't have to live out that fear.
Yeah. Today. And be very, very kind. Be very kind to your six-year-old self who knows nothing. We know nothing at six.
Who knows nothing? You know? Nothing. Well, yeah. Honestly, I didn't know a whole lot at 34 either.
I am.
Which is.
Well, I'm there with you, sister. I was, I tell this story all the time. I was 40 and I was divorcing my husband, and my job took me out and about here in Southwest Missouri. But I mean, I thought I was the bomb at 40. You know, I thought I knew everything I needed to know. I was all grown up, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm in this little cafe, and I'm next to these older women who look to be about 70, maybe. I don't know. But they're talking about one of their daughter-in-laws. And one of the women says, oh, you know how it is when you're 50. We just didn't know anything. I was appalled, because I'm like 50?
Excuse me?
I'm 40 and I know everything. Let me, you know, so, but yeah, it just goes back to, no matter what age you are, just to be curious as to everything, what's around you, what's inside you, things that you want to do.
Yeah.
But hey, before we wrap up our conversation, I got two more things I want to ask of you. The first thing is, what are you up to nowadays? What are you doing out in the world?
I, first of all, I'm just perpetually curious. So I often am doing different things than I was doing before. I am, I'll just show you.
Well, you've had, as you say, a dizzying variety of careers.
I have, but right now, so right now I'm a color consultant. I do color analysis for people for their clothing, and also I do interiors. But I also I've been, since the pandemic, I've been playing, and I am doing, this is a Lego typewriter. I am already totally, I don't know if you, how clearly you can see it, but I've already screwed up in the middle here somewhere. I don't know where.
But you made that of Legos? That's made of Legos?
It's made of Legos.
Oh, I know. My goodness.
Well, mind boggling. It's the hardest thing I've ever created. I did.
That's
fascinating. This is one of my first things.
I love it.
Yeah. This is one of my first things.
Oh, look at that. Your little VW van. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, honestly, Legos have been so much fun. During the pandemic, I just, like, I went nuts.
That's cool.
But anyway, so I'm a color consultant, and I write a lot. I write a newsletter every week and have for years, pretty much.
I saw that. I'm going to have to sign up for that because I think that's
going to be very interesting. I call it Alive with Joy.
Yeah.
Alive with Joy. And I have a website. Oh, I have actually three websites, but I have a new website called joyoverstreet.com, which is for my new book, which is The Cherry Pie Paradox.
Oh, so is the book available?
That's now? The cover. It is not yet. Okay. It's going to be out, I don't know, in early September.
Okay.
But it's going to be available in... So it's The Cherry Pie Paradox, The Surprising Path to Diet Freedom and Lasting Weight Loss. And it's going to be, the print version will be really cool because the drawings, I have an artist friend who did a bunch of goofy drawings and it's lighthearted, but it's really, excuse me, a step-by-step process of getting free of the obsession with your weight so that you can move on to other things. Anyway, it's going to be in print, audiobook, and ebook. And there are guided meditations with it because I think that one way we can get out of our thinking mind is to be led through a meditation. I've got the transcripts in the book, but I don't want people to look at, to read the transcripts. I want them to go on the journey. So their thinking mind is out of the picture. What was your question?
What are you up to nowadays?
That's what I'm up to.
Well, I can't wait to read the book.
Thank you. I wanted to recommend a couple books. Can I do that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
The first one, Improv Wisdom by Patricia Madsen. And she taught improv at Stanford for like 30 years, favorite professor, but she's also a Buddhist, a practicing Buddhist. So these little statements in here, little maxims for living an improvised life.
Cool.
This is my Bible. And another one is, it's Transitions by William Bridges. He wrote the classic book on transitions. This is one of them. This is the way of transitions.
That book looks familiar.
Transitions was just such an important book. It came out in 1985, and it's about dealing with that time when something important has ended, and you're in that deep, dark hole, the bardo, the place in between where nothing. And his theory is that endings are actually the beginning. He articulated so well. I wish that it had been available when my husband died, because it would have been really helpful. And then of course Travels with Charlie, and the final book, I've got so many books I love, is The Art of Possibility by Ben Zander. And he has a TED talk that is just killer. But this is a wonderful book on possibility.
Do you have any parting words of wisdom for our listeners pertaining to what we're talking about today?
Yeah, there are two things. And they're both from Improv Wisdom. There are two maxims. One is say yes, and that's the first improv maxim, period. And I was a no sayer for altogether too long. Mm-hmm. So say yes, and then the other is enjoy the ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say yes and enjoy the ride. I love it. Well, I think that's a good note to end our listeners with. So
this has been a total delight, Shelley. I
have
so
loved
appreciate
this.
Your...
We're definitely going to have to have you back on, and we'll chat
when
we're done here about getting you in the group with the book. But anyway, thank you, Joy, so much. It was just
thank you so much for inviting me. Yeah. So. All right. Thanks. It was a delight for me too.